Today's episode of Lighting Up the Marquee is sponsored by Dark Sales Productions. In today's world, video is the best way to share your story. Whether you're looking to market your business or brand on social media, or even share amazing memories like your wedding and other events, Dark Sales Productions is committed to creating the best content and capturing your most precious memories for you. Based in the Chicagoland area, Dark Sales Productions has worked with clients in the past to help market both local businesses and larger brands, capture newlyweds' perfect day, produce short films, and even work with individuals looking to have professional photos and headshots taken. No matter the business occasion or individual, Dark Sales Productions is ready to work with you. All you have to do is visit the website darksalesproductions.com to learn more about them, and you can also contact them to get started on your next project. That's DarkSalesProductions.com. And if you go over there and mention that you listened to this ad on Lighting Up the Marquee, they'll hook you up with some special offers. Once again, that's darksalesproductions.com. All you got to do is mention that you listened to this ad on Lighting Up the Marquee, and some special offers will be there waiting for you. Now, let's get started with today's episode. Welcome back to Lighting Up the Marquee. This is episode 77. I'm joined by a special guest, Nadia Geiger. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for being on. For everybody listening, Nadia is an actress that I worked with at Columbia back in, I think, 2017.
Yeah.
I think a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But we kept in touch after that shoot. We even met up a couple times in LA when I was living there. But now you are thriving out there. You have a new album coming out April 2nd, Wasted Art.
Yep.
And then you were on the CW's All American.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, that's it.
Very good stuff. Yeah.
So we're going to talk all about that. We're going to catch up a little bit too. But how have you been? We were just talking before we rolled.
Yeah, I've been doing great, relatively, especially considering with the pandemic. I think I've been lucky to live in LA and been able to take hikes and just get some fresh air. And my dad's my neighbor, and I've been able to stay sane. And, you know, then obviously our film industry kind of started back up. So I feel really grateful for that. It's very different from like a lot of theater actors right now and most artists. So I feel really grateful and lucky in general.
How was it at the beginning of the pandemic when everything was like shutting down? And
it was weird. And I'm usually not a high anxiety person, but I had a lot of anxiety. I was working at 24 Hour Fitness in Burbank as a personal trainer, and that obviously completely shut down. And I was just scared health wise. My dad had also just moved here from Wisconsin a week before lockdown, and he happened to be staying with my boyfriend and I in a one bedroom apartment, and then he ended up staying for I think a month just because he was looking for an apartment to live, and we didn't know what was going to happen. So that was intense. That was crazy. But like I said, I just felt really lucky. I just tried to work out every day. I do really miss the gym. But it was such a weird time to be alive, obviously.
Oh yeah. When everything was locking down, I had just started at round one over in Burbank. They were just opening it up. And it was like the opening. It's like kind of like a Dave and Buster's kind of thing, like a restaurant, yeah, arcade sort of thing. It was in the Burbank Mall. But yeah, I showed up for my shift and they were cleaning, and no one told me that they were closing for the pandemic. So I still showed up for my shift.
That's so funny.
But like I told you, me and my girlfriend moved to Indiana because in August my lease was about to run out. We were like looking at places, but we were both unemployed because we both lost our jobs because of the pandemic. But every place we were like applying to was like, oh, unemployment's fine, like, you know, for now. And then we would apply at some places and they're like, oh, just kidding, like, you can't get it.
Yeah,
so
that's
we're just
really
like,
tough with your lease ending. I didn't even think about that.
We were just like, let's probably go to Indiana. I have family here. Stay with them for a little bit. There's more things open in Indiana. So we moved out here and got jobs within like 2 weeks of moving.
Oh, nice.
So that's like a big reason we came here. And we were going to stay here for a little bit until like whatever the world was going to figure out.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. I've been lucky also to be on unemployment this entire time. I feel really lucky about that. And I just started opening up some private clients, outdoors and virtually. And I actually really enjoy that. It kind of just happened. So I've been really enjoying that even more than working at a gym.
So that's through you. You're not doing that through like,
nope, just my, I had like some friends ask me. So I started at like a super low rate and then they just kind of kept referring other people and I do it outside in the park and I'm really enjoying it. So
that's nice.
That's good.
We were trying to like do workouts at home, but like in LA, everyone was buying all the dumbbells and everything from like Target and everything.
Yeah.
So we ended up
completely sold out.
So we came here and we were surprised how stocked like Dick's Sporting Goods and everything was. We ended up purchasing like a squat rack and
really?
Yeah.
A whole squat rack.
We got the squat. It was like we had the squat rack and then they had a sale on like a barbell and plates. It was like 300 pounds worth of stuff for like $150.
What?
Yeah.
That's awesome. So it was sold out everywhere. We could not get anything. We were on the wait list for Core Home Fitness, which has the adjustable dumbbells, kind of like the Bowflex ones. And they were sold out for months and months. And we would like enter in a like lottery to just be able to pay full price for them because they were so sold out. And then eventually we finally like won the that lottery and paid for them. I think they were like, I want to say over $300 and each dumbbell goes up to 50 pounds. And I miss the gym so much. And I just got my vaccine. So I just realized I'm going to be able to go back to the gym and I'm so excited.
We're still trying to wait. Because Indiana's weird with the vaccination list is like they're progressively lowering the age. I think right now it's at 45 and up, but so right now we don't qualify for any of the vaccines right now, but we're just waiting on that.
Yeah, I was able to, I used to be a server, so I still have my food handler's card. So I was able to, they opened it up to the food industry. So I kind of, my boyfriend got it first and then I kind of jumped on that.
Well, I'm working at like Whole Foods right now and they're talking about getting us the vaccine, but like nothing's official has come out yet, but
yeah,
I'm surprised they haven't jumped on it quicker.
I feel like the rollout's speeding up and just having a lot more available for people, which is awesome.
By the time they get it at my job, I'll be already qualified outside of my job. But that's good that you guys got the vaccine and can go back to the, are they opening more? Like what's the whole LA opening process now?
They've been open. They've had a few that have been open outdoors, but they've recently been open indoors too. I just haven't felt safe to go, but I just realized like with my vaccine, I'm going to be completely safe to go to the gym and I miss it a lot. I don't love working out at home.
Yeah. That's what I like when we had the dumbbells. It was just that. And every time we saw some at like Target, we would grab them. But we got, it's kind of like you get used to them. So you're just like, you need more.
Yeah.
Or like, I don't, it's not more like a better routine or like you feel like you got used to it too much.
Yeah.
So it's like you kind of lose that motivation.
For sure. I'm not in the right mindset at home. And I, for cardio, I always did the Stairmaster every day for 20 minutes. So I really haven't been getting much cardio at all. But we do have a lot of really nice secret stairs where we live. We live Beechwood Canyon in Hollywood, like technically the Hollywood Hills. So there's just like beautiful hills and secret stairs that we can like run up to get a little cardio. But
we've been because we work out at in our apartment because we have a two bed now. So the second room became the gym with all the equipment. And then our complex has a gym where you can reserve for four slots and two of them goes to us because it's one slot per person. So we go down there and we'll bring our jump rope and just go jump rope down there or use the treadmills.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, I really want to move to an apartment that has like a small gym in the complex just because it's so convenient to have it right there. So that's awesome.
That's how I think most of the apartments we looked at here, like they either had like their own gym facility or they had like something.
Yeah, and it's that's amazing.
It's been very nice being
in. Yeah, that's what I want. For sure, I really want that.
It's like touring apartments here was so different than LA because like LA is like pretty much everything's the same, like have to buy like a fridge or something, like something's missing. We toured here and it's like everything's fully furnished, you got everything
super nice, probably refurbished, like refurbished appliances. And
well, because the one we're in now, we looked at a second floor and a third floor. Price was exactly the same. Layout was exactly the same. But they're like, if you go to the third floor, you get a 12-foot ceiling. And like nobody obviously above us. So we're the top floor. So you won't get like footsteps.
Yeah.
So we're like, for the same price, just go for the third floor.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, high ceilings, windows. That's
it's super nice.
Crazy what you can get in the Midwest versus what you can get in LA. But
oh yeah, it's like we were looking at the prices, especially out in LA, because that's when we were thinking about coming here. We started looking at apartments, and we're like, you can get a 2-bed for $1,000.
Yeah,
I was like, I know we were completely forgot about the Midwest being.
It's like crazy. Cheaper. It's crazy. Yeah, we were looking at a studio loft, and I don't know if you know the building El Centro, but it's on Hollywood Boulevard. Mm-hmm. And it was a super cool loft, like kind of like private rooftop deck and then another balcony on the first floor. And it was like probably $3,500.
Mm-hmm.
But it does like, the whole building had all the amenities, like the full gym and yoga, and like it was a beautiful place. But yeah, it's crazy.
I think that's where the LA gets you, is like, oh, it's gonna be a lot higher, but you get a lot more amenities. Or like some places it's just like you pay a lot just for what like the room is.
Yeah.
Because I
love living in LA. So
I miss it sort of, and then don't miss it someday. Like once the pandemic's over, I'm not gonna, like if I go back to LA, I'm not gonna miss that traffic.
Oh my gosh, it's already back.
It's back.
It's great. Yeah, for the most part, it's crazy. I forgot about it for a little while. I was like, oh yeah, we have traffic.
Because my girlfriend was working in Norwalk for a while, and we were in Glendale. Mm-hmm. So when the pandemic hit, she was still working because Norwalk is outside of LA County.
Mm-hmm.
And normally it took like an hour to get down there, and then like once everything locked down, it took us 25 minutes because there was nothing.
Yep. Yeah. We never used to go to the beach just because we're in Hollywood and the West Side's kind of a far drive. But during the pandemic, we could get there in 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And my dad has never known LA with traffic. So now that it's picking back up, he's like, oh, this kind of sucks.
Yep.
And I truly forgot about it. And my driving actually got a little bit worse just because I wasn't driving as much. So I had to kind of readjust.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's LA drivers are, it's different in the Midwest too. It's like a whole different thing here.
Yeah,
but
I feel like people are more accepting of crazy driving in LA because sometimes you have to, like sometimes if you're trying to park, like you have to stop traffic, or if you need to get to your exit, you have to like jump a bunch of lanes, and people here are used to it because they're like, okay, you kind of have to get to where you're going.
That's something we were talking about is in LA, everyone knows like the hand signals when you roll your window down to stop people from going because someone's turning. Because we were here and nobody does that.
Yeah.
It's like nobody, you'll stop to let someone go, but nobody lets other drivers know to stop.
Yeah.
Everybody here is more aggressive.
Funny. Yeah, for sure. Oh, the driving is just so aggressive. It's just like, I'm going, like you better adjust. My parallel parking did get super good when I first moved out here. I lived in West Hollywood, and I had to park every day, and I could parallel park like none other.
That's what I had to do when I was living in Glendale, because I had street parking.
Yeah,
but I would always try to find the spot that was by itself, or like just pull right in.
Yeah, for sure. I lived in Glendale when I first moved. Got out here.
They're all rude over there. Everybody in Glendale is super rude.
I think Glendale has the most car accidents of like any neighborhood.
I'd believe it.
I think I heard that.
It's like those neighborhood, those side streets, it's all stop signs. Like literally every block is a stop sign.
Yeah. And the weirdest thing, outside of my actual apartment, you couldn't park unless you had a street permit. And I just didn't get one because I only lived there for several months.
Mm-hmm.
And I managed in the first couple months that I lived here, I think I got my car towed twice. I got like 3 parking tickets and a flat tire.
Mm-hmm.
Like all within like a month, and I was just like, welcome to LA.
I think I got 1 ticket for parking because they did the whole street sweeping, and like I forgot which side of the street I was parked
on. Got one of those.
It's not fun.
Yeah,
I remember,
I'm better now.
I remember one day I got it right before the dude got to my car. He was like ticketing everybody, but then I got out and moved it before he saw my car.
Nice. Yeah,
but
that's good.
That was the worst. It was always like so inconvenient. Like 2 hours in the morning when no one's awake.
Yeah.
Or I got one in Huntington Park. I was at a parking lot and the time was 4 a.m. to 6 a.m. Like you couldn't park in this parking lot.
Uh-huh.
But they put the sign like not at eye level. They put it way above so no one could see it.
And the rules are so random. It's like 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. And then like it's like who made these rules?
Some of them say it's for like street sweeping, but the ones like in Glendale were just like just don't park. But it didn't say why. And I never saw a street sweeper.
Yeah. I once got towed from a street that had no parking restrictions because I accidentally parked in front of someone's driveway.
Well, you remember Ian, right?
Yeah.
So we went to Tatsu to pick up ramen and we literally just got there and parked and we were only there for like 5 minutes because we'd put the order in ahead and we came out and it said no parking, but we took a photo of when we got there and like the sign. We got back to the car and there was a ticket on there.
That just happened to me. I haven't got a parking ticket in a really long time, but I used to always go to the Dunkin' Donuts on Hollywood Boulevard and everyone does it. There's nowhere to park. I do the mobile order. You park, it's in the red. Put my hazards on. I'm probably in there for under a minute because it was just a mobile order. I just grabbed a coffee and the guy like walks up behind me and hands me a ticket. And I was like, what?
What is this?
Yeah.
That's always the worst. Like that's so weird. Like they're always just there.
Yeah. Like I didn't even know where he came from. Like I had just pulled up.
He's just waiting.
Yeah. It's crazy.
That's so weird. I'm getting used to like Indiana cops because they all just like park in one spot so you can see them. Some of them try to like hide like on the freeway. They'll be under the bridge, but you can clearly see it's a cop like doing radar.
Yeah.
Because it's also weird here because in LA it's 65 on the freeways, right?
Mm.
Here it's 55, but everyone goes 70.
Yeah. No, I remember that because I'm from Wisconsin. But also in LA, it's like impossible to get a speeding ticket because you just can't go that fast because there's so much traffic.
I actually got one.
Really?
Yeah. Here's the thing I didn't like about it. And I kind of thought it was bullshit was I was driving. It was in Huntington Park again. There's a bridge that you go up and down and it says you have to go 30 because there's a lot of like semi trucks because it's a factory area. So when you go down that hill, even if you're not stepping on gas, you still go like 40 because it's a real steep hill.
For sure.
I was merging around a car because I was like pretty close to it. And I was going to hit it if I didn't merge. And there was a cop right at the bottom and he pulled me over and he was like, you were going 45 and your car stuck out because it was white. But I was like, even if I went down that hill, not pressing the gas, it would have been 40.
Yeah, that's such a trap. They're just trying to trap you at that point.
I was really about to like fight that ticket because I was like, this is stupid. Like I think like, the next day I went on that bridge and tested it and I was like, you still go 40 even if you're not doing anything.
You can go to court and contest them and they'll usually reduce them. I did that in high school and I got a couple speeding tickets and they reduced them a little bit.
I should have done that. I was just like this was during the pandemic and I was just like, nah, I'm not dealing with that.
Yeah, you can blame anything on the pandemic.
I could. Like,
sorry, pandemic. I'm just
sorry.
Had a rough time. I had to speed home to something. Yeah.
I mean,
get my vaccine or something.
Well, I was taking my girlfriend to work that day. It was like on the way.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It was so weird. Like that was the time during the pandemic when I was waiting for my unemployment to come in too. Cause I was on on backlog for a while. Cause they approved me and then I didn't get it. So they approved me in like March and I didn't get all my money until June or July.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That's nuts.
When I finally got a hold of someone to call, they were like, oh, well, you have two cases open because I did one before they had the COVID option. And then I redid it like a day later because the COVID option was there. And they're like, oh, we're investigating because you have two claims open.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, no, that first one got denied. I need this one.
Yeah. It was such a nightmare when that all went down. Did you just get like a huge check then once it finally came through?
Yeah, I had $7,000 like come in right at once.
Oh my gosh.
I was like,
that's so crazy.
I was like, it's good that it hit now, but it's all backlog. So it's like made up for months.
Yeah, right, for sure. I got pretty lucky with that because being a gym, I feel like we were one of the first things to shut down. I got it almost immediately.
Well, because we were at Universal, they were also waiting for what Disney was going to do. Because Universal always follows what Disney does.
Yeah.
So I think once Disney announced they were shutting down, Universal announced they would shut down.
Yeah, for sure. And they're now just opening up again. They're opened up again.
Yep. I heard about that. And I was thinking it's super stupid that they decided to reopen.
Yeah, it's crazy. We're almost there. Like, it's not... Honestly, yesterday was Saturday and we were driving around and it's almost like the pandemic is like, completely over because, and I think people are feeling like that with the vaccine, like it's just packed like everywhere. There's indoor dining just opened back up at 25%. And I'm really excited, but I'm like, let's not like overdo it right before that we cross the finish line. Like we've been here a year, we can do like a couple more weeks. You know?
You can go to Texas where it's 100% capacity everywhere.
Oh my God. I don't even want to talk about Texas. That's crazy. And there's no mask mandate. And I've heard that people are getting in trouble for wearing masks. And I'm like, Texas, what?
I heard they arrested.
We've made it this far.
I heard a story that they arrested some old lady because like she went to a bank, but the bank was still like having masks because it's a private business. Mm-hmm. And she didn't want to wear it. And the security guard was just telling her to put one on, like, while she's inside.
Yeah.
And they arrested her because she, refused.
Oh, my gosh. People are nuts.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know why it's so hard to wear a mask. But...
That's what, it's been, like, a whole weird thing back in the Midwest, too. Like, especially because we drove from L.A. to Indiana. So we saw, like, every demographic of the country, like, mid-pandemic. And seeing how every place was handling it.
That's interesting.
It was very, some places were not cool, especially one in Missouri.
Oh, I bet.
It was like a gas station. We were the only ones wearing masks, like no employees, nothing. It was very interesting.
Yeah, I've experienced that because we've gone on a lot of drives in California just during the pandemic to try to go somewhere. And even in some of the like counties in California, like the more rural areas, like we'd be the only people wearing masks. I think LA is just very good about that, which is nice.
Well, we went to Vegas in June last year when like they reopened and we're trying like testing it out. And yeah, we went through like Victorville in California and it's not rural, but it's like getting close to the desert. And then Vegas.
Yeah, it's surprising.
And then Vegas was good for the most part. But we left as soon as it was getting like super packed.
Yeah. Yeah. We're already planning a trip to Vegas.
It's fun. It was fun.
Yeah. Now that we're both vaxxed and using some of those comps from our previous trips. So.
We were like, let's just go because no one's going to be there. And it was pretty dead for most of the weekend. But we went like probably the hottest weekend. It was like 100 degrees every day in Vegas.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Vegas gets so hot.
Yeah, it was not fun. But let's talk more about your whole acting, because like I said, we worked together back at Columbia.
Yes,
which was a lot of fun. Like I've mentioned I've mentioned some stuff about that shoot on this show, because honestly I don't really talk about my shoot. I talk about the other person who was shooting at the same time.
Oh yeah.
And I always tell the story. I tell the story about how they wrapped 3 hours early and everyone was like, what are you doing?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I forgot about that. That's so, I remember you telling that story and that they, because I was in class with the two actors in that shoot, and they, you know, their director had chosen to have them, they were fluent Spanish speakers, and their director chose them to have it, do it completely in Spanish, even though I don't think he was a Spanish speaker.
No. I've told that.
So we were kind of like, do you feel comfortable with doing this? And like, that was really interesting.
So what we heard and what he said in directing class is the only reason he had them speak Spanish was because they could speak Spanish. And that's the sole reason he did
like,
that.
Like, oh, cool. You've got a film in Spanish that you can't understand, you know.
And we're like, why'd you do that? And he was like, because they could.
Yeah, well, good for him.
We've talked about that film a few times. We found that film very, because I want to know, because you guys watched all the films, right? Or did you guys not watch them in your class?
I think I did watch them, and it was just them like sitting in two chairs facing each other, and pretty sure just talking for the whole time. So obviously I could see how that would wrap super quickly because there wasn't a lot going on.
Yeah, well,
because I couldn't understand it because I don't speak Spanish.
We told him like he could have gotten more coverage or like done other things, and he was like, "No, I'm good."
Yeah, I'm good. Just filmed it.
But I guess
one take.
Because Ian worked on my set for the first half of the day, and then Haley came in and did the second half, and then Haley went to meet up with Ian after like all the shoot was done. Mm-hmm. And that director came in to where they were and was bragging how they finished 3 hours early.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, what? Like,
I think you might have told me that, how he just brags all the time about himself and like how he's like this innovative, like amazing director. And
I believe was an actor before that. And then he was just like, I'm going to try directing too. Like, I'm going to try to do everything.
Just going to try it. Yeah.
That guy, like, we found some of his old stuff that he's like written and acted in.
Oh god,
we found a lot of it during that class.
Oh gosh, yeah. I've never met him. I don't think I've ever talked to him, but I know how. I've never tried to direct. I don't know the first thing about directing, so I can't imagine like just trying, like just jumping into it like with nothing.
It's like, I feel like a lot of the best directors, though, are actors, because the whole point of directing is talking to actors. So when an actor becomes a director, they already know the language.
Yeah, for sure. It's hard, though, because it's different than an acting coach, you know, like they kind of have to have their whole vision and bring the whole project together. And like, it's really visual, too, obviously.
It's like, well, with the director, you have to visualize everything. Then you have to like talk to your cinematographer so they can help with your lighting and show, like, work with them on how to get the shots.
Yeah.
But then when you're on set, it's all about talking to the actors. That's the whole like director's job on the day, while also managing like the shots and making sure you're like doing good on time.
Yeah, that's so interesting. It sounds hard. I don't know if I'll ever try it, but not for a long time.
Not for a long time. Well, because when we were doing our scene, I was also simultaneously working on my other scene that I had to shoot like pretty much immediately after. Like, we wrapped shooting ours, and then I think it was a week or two later, I was doing my location shoot. Like, completely different script, completely different scene.
Yeah.
Completely different tone of a film, too.
For sure. Just having those different like stories in your brain and trying to keep them cohesive.
It was... That's like the only good thing I would say from that class was time managing, how to handle two scenes at once.
Yeah.
But I wanted to get your perspective on that, because since you were the actress I worked with in that scene, because I'm pretty sure you guys, it was like the same process with like getting paired with a director and, but what was it like day to day in the classroom? Because I think with us, we were going over shots and...
well, that class, I think it was called Character and Ensemble. And so the class was a lot of being an animal this day, being a different element this day, and learning to like tune into intuitively with your other actors, your other ensemble. So it wasn't actually specifically a lot to do with screen acting. It was more like core foundational, like stage work, but still like really good and really necessary. We had an incredible teacher, but I can't remember his name right now, but maybe I'll think of it. And yeah, I loved that class. I think a lot of actors, especially in LA, actually, they shy away from the organic side of acting because LA, it's all technical, which is great. And my technique has just improved a lot just by being here. But what I learned at school was just that organic side of the, like, just be a different animal, be an element today, be air, be water. Mm-hmm. And I think people sometimes think that that's unnecessary, but it's really core foundation to, like, learn how to use your instrument, use your body, and use your voice, and tune in and be present with your other ensemble. I hope that was your question. I kind of just went off.
Well, because that kind of leads into... Because what I found interesting about Columbia is, and I've talked to a couple other actors from Columbia, they don't really have like a acting for film or TV. It's all stage theatrics.
Yeah.
Because when I think they told us when we get paired with actors, they're like, make sure to like bring them down. Like, they don't have to be theatrical, because it's all like film is more intimate and like in camera.
Yeah.
That's what they taught us, like, as filmmakers. Yeah.
It's more technical for sure, and it's a whole thing to learn. Like, when I got here, I actually pretty much had no film technique. And you just learn it. You learn how to do it fast. You learn like just little techniques, like what's called a down up, where like you look at the floor and then you look at your scene partner. It just adds like a dramatic element. Always mm-hmm. trying to be aware of like, is this a close up? Is this a mid shot? Is this a wide shot? So I know like how big to make my movements. Mm-hmm. And it's just practice, and it's so necessary. And it honestly has made me a much better actor, because I'm just doing it almost every day now. I do self-tapes pretty often and different classes. So just doing it really often is really important, because you might get an audition. I got one the other day that was at like, I want to say like 7 p.m. at night, and it was due at 11 a.m. the next morning. Mm-hmm. So you have to have technique to be able to bust that out so quickly. Whereas theater, you have months and months and months to like learn the character and work with the director. And then you get to set and you have one rehearsal and then you start filming. Mm-hmm. So
that's what I feel like Columbia, or like even film schools and acting schools in general, should probably start incorporating, is less do the theatrics, because to get the organic side, but also if you want to be a film actor, like a TV actor, like that's, like you said, it's going to be a little harder, or take a little more time to translate.
For sure. And it's a lot of it's just speed, being able to do things really quickly.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I was going to ask with like film classes at Columbia, at least a lot of ours were the same thing over and over again. Is that how like a lot of the mm-hmm. acting classes were?
I didn't think so. I actually loved the acting classes. We had the Theater Foundations course freshman year was 4 hours twice a week. So 8 hours a week of just doing all this organic stuff, but I didn't feel it was repetitive. I think for being an actor, you kind of, it kind of has to be a little bit repetitive, because you just are learning to like be present.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I was in musical theater too, so I actually didn't take as many any acting classes. It was a lot of singing and dancing, so that, yeah, it's probably why.
Because with the film, like the film course, we would do, like, for example, like I took my foundations class, and then yep. I took a class called image design, which is like how to break down shots and images. Mm-hmm. But it was mm-hmm. essentially the same thing. It was both. It was mm-hmm. we learned it in foundation, and they kind of just repeated it in image.
Interesting.
Design.
Yeah, I didn't have much of that, but again, I didn't take that as many acting classes as other people.
Like the only classes I think that benefited for film, at least for some of them, like directing 1 and 2 for me, because that way you learn mm-hmm. different scenes and like how to talk to actors and do different, like directing 2, we did a location shoot, which we didn't do in directing 1, but
yeah,
and then like lighting. But the thing is, like some of them were like editing, like Ian and I mm-hmm. took that class. And we were trying to like learn more things or trying to improve our own editing skills, but we had been editing before that. And we both were like, we learned nothing in this class. Like everything we already knew was already here.
Yeah. That's so funny.
Cause I remember, I think one day I asked the teacher a question and she didn't know how to answer it. And I figured it out by Googling it.
Oh my gosh.
In like 2 minutes.
That's crazy. No, I've loved my classes. Now I don't know if they had, I don't think they had an acting for film class. I took like Shakespeare and all the musical theater acting courses. So yeah, they should.
They should. Cause like I've talked like with you and like, again, a lot of the other actors, they're saying it's a lot of theatrics. And even like with the film, they're like, you need to bring them down because they're trained to do theater, not film.
For sure. You definitely want to also have a pretty quiet voice in a film, I think.
Because mm-hmm. the boom mic picks everything up.
For sure. I forgot what I was going to say. I was wondering when I like made the decision to move to LA, I was wondering if I like, should I do this, you know, because it's kind of a big decision. I was like, should I stay in Chicago a little bit longer and try to do professional theater and professional like TV credits like Chicago Fire, because I really had nothing. I was like, this is kind of crazy to just go to LA. Mm-hmm. But I'm so glad that I did, because you naturally just kind of level up, and you naturally just, I just learned how to act for film, because that's what all the classes here, and that's just what everyone is just catered towards. And it's just like, it's kind of like a just do it. And I've just improved so much on the business side and on the technical like craft side. So if anyone's thinking about moving to LA, I would definitely recommend it.
Did you always want to be like a film actor, or were you like, what did you want to end up being?
Yes. It's weird. I'm one of those people that I think since the age of six, I was just like, I'm going to be an actor, and I've never considered anything else. And I did know I was going to be a film actor, even though I majored in musical theater. I just didn't want to lose singing and dancing. I honestly don't think I'd be good enough to go to New York and do Broadway, but I would love to do like a Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist or Pitch Perfect or a TV show or movie that incorporates singing and dancing.
At one point, would you like to do a full musical,
like theater musical,
or even a film, like a film musical?
Film musical is probably my dream job. And of course, anyone who's done musical theater, I love musical theater. It's the most just well-rounded, like informed type of craft, and it's informed even with me doing music. It's informed everything I do because it's just storytelling, and it's so well-rounded. I think musicals are just hard to break into. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like a Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist type show is like my dream show.
Musicals, I've always here's the thing. I love musicals. I've always been super impressed by them. Mm-hmm. And I hated at Columbia, so many filmmakers would be like, this is a music video, shut this off. Like, it's not a good movie. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, that was half the film demographic at Columbia I did not vibe with.
Yeah, for sure. No, I love movie musicals. I watched Hamilton on Disney Plus. I've never seen it live. Mm. And one of our friends said that they almost shut it off in the first 5 minutes or something. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, you're crazy. This is a masterpiece. I don't know what's wrong with you.
I have an issue with it. It's not as far as Hamilton. I love Hamilton, but my issue with it is I wish it was a movie. I wish they would have made it into a movie instead of just recording a performance. Yeah,
it's hard to just record. It doesn't translate usually. Mm-hmm.
I'm like, cool, I get to see the original cast perform it,
right?
But it's it's them from 5 years ago, I think, is when it was recorded, versus mm-hmm. In the Heights that's coming out. I'm super excited for that movie because they made it cinematic.
I'm really excited for that, and maybe they should should make
a I think they would movie. They're gonna have to they've eventually. Got to
yeah
they'll yeah, probably so. See how well In the Heights does and fast track it.
Yeah. And that goes to show that there is different, it's a whole different ball game putting between stage and film is mm-hmm. just filming a stage. It's not going to work. There's a whole other craft with the acting and with everything to make it translate. And obviously the cinematography.
Well, plus with In the Heights, I think I've seen photos of when it was on Broadway and it's just a New York set, just flat. Mm-hmm. But now with the movie, mm-hmm. They can use the whole neighborhood of Washington Heights.
Yeah.
So
I'm so excited for that.
It looks super good. I was super bummed. That was the one movie, maybe one of the five movies last year that got pushed that I was bummed about.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I forgot what else going to come out last year, but it was a lot of movies. But that was that mm-hmm. was probably one of the top ones that I got bummed about for being pushed.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so excited about that.
Because I think that that comes out. West Side Story comes out this mm-hmm. year, I think. I honestly lost track of every movie coming out this year.
Yeah. What do you think of the Oscar nominations?
I haven't seen a lot of them, but I liked a lot of the picks. I just saw Nomadland, so
okay.
I'm super happy Chloe Zhao got the directing nomination.
Mm-hmm.
What else was there that I was happy about? Judas and the Black Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
I did think it was
Chicago 7, I thought was good.
I didn't see that one. I still need to see that one. I did think it was not stupid, but I kind of was just like typical Oscars put Mank at 10 nominations because it's a movie about Citizen Kane. So obviously they're going to be like, that deserves all the awards.
Yeah.
Even though Mank is just a decent movie.
Yeah, for sure. I just watched Minari, and a bunch of at least three, I feel of the movies started out as indie films.
I've been wanting to see Minari.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
I've been wanting to see that. Promising Young Woman, I've been wanting to see.
Mm-hmm. That started out as an indie film.
I think, I don't know what else there was on the nominations, but it was a very,
yeah,
it was a pretty diverse catalog this year. And then like animated feature, like two Pixar movies got in, like no brainer.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is going to be like one of the first Oscar years. I probably haven't seen everything. I think last year I'd seen everything.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens with it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like the whole pandemic's made me like out of the loop on everything in film.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, me too.
I've just been watching like all my movies in my Blu-ray collection. I've just been going through all those instead of being like, let me watch something new.
Yeah. I feel like there's so many platforms now. Like you have to have Apple TV and HBO. And
yeah,
like SAG like sends you all the movies that are up for SAG awards in like DVDs, but I'm like, they need to stop doing that because most people don't even have a DVD player anymore. Mm-hmm. And it would save them a lot of money to just give you like a login, like be able to stream it.
Well, the thing that sucks about those too is when they get the screener, that's probably the first time they've seen the movie. So like in the Oscars categories, like sound mixing and sound editing, like they think it's the same thing. So they're just going to pick the same movie. But when they watch it, they're probably not watching it on a good like speaker or sound system.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So they're just like, okay, just give it to the same movie.
Yeah. Oh, that sucks.
But it's like people who watch it in the theater or like who do that job, like know the difference.
Yeah, I was listening to some of the director panels from some of the directors of like, I think Promising Young Woman and maybe Minari. And they were saying it's kind of sad for them that not a lot of people got to experience their movies in the theater, but then it was also, their movies kind of reached a wider audience of people that might not necessarily go to the theater to watch A Promising Young Woman, but they were able to watch it at home. So it's like, yeah.
I think that's the benefit of like, that's probably like the one good thing about the pandemic is having those movies go to these platforms. Cause like you said, like, if you go to a theater, like Justice League just came out, most people are going to go watch that over Minari. Like if those two movies are playing in the theater, what are you going to go pick to see?
Yeah.
Well, Justice League might not be a good example. That was like 4 hours. So like I have been watching it the last 3 days. I've had to watch it in like parts.
My boyfriend's been watching it and he's, yeah, not been loving it, I don't think.
What? I loved it. Compared to the one that came out 4 years ago, this one is like infinitely better.
Oh, yeah. That's what I've heard too. Yeah.
And that one 4 years ago upset me so much.
Yeah.
Because I was talking like Justice League for me is like what Avengers is for most other people because I'm way more into the DC comics than the Marvel comics.
Yeah.
So like this movie that just came out, this is what I wanted.
Oh, that's good. That's awesome. So you understand everything.
It's everything, and as far as like a film, it's definitely a lot better because it took its time and like pacing.
That's what I heard.
Versus like just showing something cool and moving on.
Yeah, I just watched WandaVision. I don't know any of the Marvel, any of the comics, but I loved it still. I thought it was so creative.
WandaVision's really good. Have you seen any of the other like Marvel stuff, or were you just jumping into it?
Nope, I just jumped into it.
So you're probably...
I was just appreciating the period pieces of the different decades of television. And like, I was like, what's going on in the beginning? So I thought that was really creative.
That's cool. Cause with WandaVision, I think you could watch it on its own, but then it definitely ties into everything that the whole Marvel universe has done.
Yeah. I probably should watch the Marvel stuff.
I mean, most of it's probably spoiled now with WandaVision. I think I was going to ask back to like acting and everything. I was going to ask like with Columbia, because I only know you worked on my set and Ian's set because those are the two I was there. But do you think those film projects help translate to when you moved to LA or?
Absolutely. I honestly had not done, those might be the only two films I've done at Columbia. And I did like I had a web series back home in Madison, Wisconsin that we self-produced. But honestly, being on your set, I was kind of like, I think I had been to LA like the week before or something just to visit. And with that mixed with like being on your film set, I was like, okay, this is what I want to do for a living. And I really hadn't, it was such a different ball game. Like, think like just even just getting used to like the cameras being there and then mm-hmm. trying to like blur that out. It absolutely was super good practice.
That was interesting to work on, because we had to, after shooting it, I had to work with a lot of like, because I edited it. So I had to work with, there's one shot with Matthew where, because he's super tall. We had to shoot from underneath. Mm-hmm. And I messed up because it goes over the set. So you can see where the set wall ended. Oh. So I had to put like an aspect ratio on it.
Wow.
I know most people at film school think that's pretentious if you do that. But mm-hmm. I think I said like, oh, like it cut off the set, so I had to do that to cover it up.
Yeah.
And that happened.
I don't know anything about that.
That happened in my location shoot too. You could see one of the lights. So I put the aspect ratio in. Yeah. And I think it made the films look better. It made them look more cinematic.
Yeah, they looked great.
Mm-hmm. I was very happy with the set design on ours. Because mm-hmm. I think the one thing I went into that day hating was the fact it was on a soundstage.
Right.
Because I always hated shooting at the MPC.
Yeah, that was nice for me too, because yours was on a soundstage and then Ian's was on location, just to get the different experiences. And Ian's, I was really impressed with kind of like the dance of honestly mm-hmm. the whole production, because I don't think people realize there's so much that goes into filmmaking. And I realized being on set of All American too, like they just, especially with COVID, during COVID, mm-hmm. like it is an operation. Like there's mm-hmm. so much that goes into it.
I know with Ian's set, we were messing with the jib to try to get that one shot at the very end.
Yeah.
Ian's set was a lot of fun to work on.
It was really fun. It was just not fun because it was such like depressing subject matter that I was kind of like sad at the end of the day. And Ian kept telling me like, just make it more heavy, make it more heavy. I'm like, okay.
That's what I told Ian, because he mentioned that to me. He's like, the subject matter is heavy. So like, mm-hmm. we're going to try to keep that tone. And I'm like, okay, cool, but I don't want to be feeling like that all day. Like, I'm pretty sure everybody working here doesn't want to feel like that either.
Yeah.
Like, I was trying to get everybody to like crack jokes and stuff.
Yeah, you were, which was really nice. You kept, because it was called like Where We Are or something. You kept calling it Where Are We? You're like, where are we right now?
I think we put that on the slate. But it was because he had mentioned to me it's like a heavy script, and I'm like, cool, like I get that, but. Do you want everybody feeling like that off camera too?
Yeah. I've heard that Jennifer Lawrence has a Kardashian's tent where she goes and watches the Kardashians to wind down when she has really heavy subject matter.
I know. Because you got to have those when you're doing a heavy story.
For sure. Yeah. It's not healthy from an actor's perspective. I'll tell you, it's not healthy or sustainable to just like put yourself like actually like in that real emotional space mm-hmm. all the time. And you actually can't really like play emotions. You have to play kind of actions. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Well, yeah. Cause you can't tell an actor how to feel, or you can't tell them how to say something.
Yeah.
Like that's what like my whole goal is, never to tell an actor how to say a line. I try to get them in the headspace.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what I tried doing with you guys on our set, was I gave you a bunch of like, what if questions or like scenarios. Mm-hmm.
I think I remember that. Yeah, that was really helpful.
Because the whole goal was like, I wanted to meet you guys, talk to you guys, and then get to work after that.
Yeah.
But that was one of the projects. It was like, come up with what if questions. So I tried coming up with like 2 pages worth.
That was cool. That was actually really helpful. You guys were really good to work with. And I feel it. I was just not very good at that time, in my opinion, on for film acting. I just... you get really like conscious of like the camera being there, and then mm-hmm. just with practice, it starts to like go away.
Oh, that was definitely a shoot where I was like, I could have done better as a director with, as far as like shot wise or even scheduling. Cause I know the monologue, I think we did at the very end of the day, but mm-hmm. I should have pushed that to the front of the day. Cause like, that was the heaviest part of the script.
Right. Energetic, need energy for it. Yeah.
Yeah. That was like I honestly learned from that set, from all the mistakes.
For sure. Yeah, but that's what school's for.
Oh yeah, that was, so that's probably what I took away most from our shoot, was like all of that. But it was still like mm-hmm. a really fun shoot, and Ian's shoot was, I mean, I didn't have to worry about directing that one.
Yeah, and I used both of those in my reels, in my reel. So it was great to have footage at all.
Mm-hmm. But how is that? I was going to ask you, because you just got a part on the CW's All-American, which is awesome.
Yeah.
How was shooting with that, as well as just the whole like process of landing a, I wanted to ask what the whole process of landing that role was.
Yes. I don't know how far I should back up, but, I've been in LA now, I think 2.5 years. And I got my current theatrical agent, which means film and TV, through a cold email, which is pretty rare, as you could imagine. And I absolutely love her, Courtney at Aqua. And she's fantastic. She was a child actor. She's been an actress her whole life. She's been in casting. So she really kind of understands the business in and out and knows what she's doing. And through the pandemic, she would send us updates kind of about like just what's going on with the business. And she likes to get really personal and tell us about her family. And I just think it's important to have like a really good relationship with your agent. So first, I feel really lucky to have her. I started getting auditions in the pandemic I signed with her in May. And then I started getting TV auditions pretty quickly. They were all self-tape. I did them all from my house. I have like a green sheet on my wall and we just film it on an iPhone. This was the first co-star audition that I had. And it was a self-tape. I coached with my coach over FaceTime. It was two scenes. We filmed it on our iPhones and then we sent it in, and then I was just completely booked off the tape. The next week I got an email from my agent like, hey, you booked this. So I was like, awesome. And then with COVID, I had several COVID tests. They scheduled them for me. So I'd drive to the Warner Brothers like parking lot, pull up, they swab me. I had at least 4 in the 2 weeks leading up to it. So normally when you book a TV show, it's a lot of times like you're shooting tomorrow or like you're shooting next week. But I actually had like almost 2 weeks before I started filming, which is not normal, but they just wanted to get me 4 COVID tests. And then I had a rapid test on the day of the shoot. So I couldn't go in my trailer. So they normally shoot at Warner Brothers, but we were on location at the W Hollywood Hotel, which is like less than a mile from my house, because the scene was set in Vegas. So they just faked Vegas at the W Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And so I get on the lot, couldn't go into my trailer until I got my rapid test results back. And it was really awesome. Everyone was really great. They were super strict with like, still wore masks, still wore a visor the whole time. We took a little shuttle around the block into the hotel. And it was just this whole production. There was someone always telling me where to go, what to do. And then in between setups, they were really strict with like, okay, we got this shot. We're going to reset for the next shot. But all the actors have to go away, put your mask back on, put your visor back on, go to like the holding area. There'd be someone like holding our bin with our name on it where our visor would be. They'd hand us our visor. Actually, we wouldn't have our masks on because we'd makeup on. They hand us our visor. We go to our spot, chill, call us back for the new shot. We do like one rehearsal with the visors on and then we take them off, start filming. My director was Dawn Wilkinson and she's a female director. She was really great to work with. This was like her third episode, I think, of directing All American. And she was pretty, pretty chill, I think, as film directors are, like would just kind of give, she would kind of, you know, block the scene and just give little notes here and there, but, nothing too crazy. And it was really fun. It was just kind of like, okay, we're at work. Like there's just a lot to do. And it was really strange because I'd obviously started watching the show after I booked it, and just to see the two lead actors kind of acting together. And then, because I'd only known them as characters watching the show, and then kind of like acting at me was something that I had to adjust to. Cause I was like, this is bizarre. Cause I'm in this world that I've only seen on a show. Mm-hmm. But then I adjusted and it was super fun. We went to lunch, came back, shot the second scene. I had cheese tortellini for lunch, which was a bad idea because my whole tummy was showing in the scene. and it was incredible. I wanted to be doing that every day. So
So they did so they shot two scenes that whole day, right?
Yep.
It was a was it like an 8 hour, like 10 hour, 12 hour day?
I think it was an 8 hour day. I can't remember if I got there at like 7:30 in the morning and then I left at like 6. I think it was 8 hours that I like signed off on or whatever.
Because I know with like TV, and I haven't seen in person like stop like TV where they do it and edit it later. I've witnessed like sitcom directing when we were like we went to like be a studio audience for I think a CBS. I think it got canceled after one season. Yeah. But you know, when you sit in a studio audience, like Ian and I were just watching the director work.
Yeah.
I don't remember this director. He was bad though. Like they went over by like an hour. Like the AD was getting mad at them because they're like, you're over by this much.
Because
I know with resets, when you do cuts, like you obviously cut action. With with this sitcom, they would reset, but they wouldn't cut. But he would be like, all right, we're going to go back 2 pages. And everyone's like, what? Like,
yeah, that's really weird.
You don't need to go back that far, dude.
Yeah, I really appreciated. I felt like everything was super organized on this set, especially with COVID. And I think for sitcoms and like multicam, they rehearse throughout the week and then they film on a Friday, I'm pretty sure. Whereas like kind of single cam and drama stuff, you don't really have a rehearsal. And that's also something that I learned almost immediately when I got to LA, because I started taking class at like Leslie Kahn and stuff, is like you have to know what genre it is. So like if the script is double spaced, it's a multicam comedy, and that can also completely affects your acting style. And that's just something that it has to be second nature for you.
Because you barely would work with the director, right? If there's like no rehearsal. You like show up?
Almost not at all. She probably talked to me like 3 times. Mm-hmm. Well, she called me. She actually did call me before we ever started shooting. And she kind of just let me know the tone of the show, because the scene was actually pretty funny. It was kind of like comedic relief, but the show is a drama. And even when there's comedy in the show, it's completely toned down. So like, it's not a multi-cam comedy. It's not even a single cam comedy. It's very muted. So she did want me to understand the style of the show. And she's like, yeah, I love working there. Everyone's really great. This is kind of what we're doing for the scene.
Mm-hmm. That's like, cause I've always wanted to have, like when I direct, I always want to have rehearsals with the actors, or at least like one before shooting. Mm-hmm. I think with one of my films I did in Foundation, and the shoot after our set, I didn't do any rehearsals for those two films. Or we did one. So we did one. It wasn't even a rehearsal. It was a blocking day. Because it was this, it was like all single take heist film. So
yeah,
we only had one day of blocking and practicing it.
Yeah. We're spoiled in theater to have so much rehearsal, because it's usually about like one rehearsal beforehand.
Well, they teach us with directing. They're like, try to get as many rehearsals as possible. Like they literally told us schedule it. Like, I think that's why I kind of overkilled Hugh and Matthew with blocking rehearsals, because they were just like, schedule as many as you can.
Yeah, no, that's good.
I mean, we were lucky enough to get that same room the whole time, so I could use all the stuff in there.
Yeah, it was the day of, and that was, so after I booked it, I actually had just a quick call with my coach for her to kind of go let me know like what set was going to be like, and I just rehearsed it again with my coach like over FaceTime and that was my rehearsal until the day of.
Do they give you feedback on set? So like when they do resets, you said she talked to you like 3 times. Is there like
a little bit, and it's more technical stuff. Like she'd be like, hey, actually it's funny. She was like, hey, I love that energy. I think I was coming at it a little bit too, like I said, comedic energy. And she's like, just give us some more options. Just tone it down a little bit. And then different things like, there's always people like super on continuity. So I'd go like this, and they'd yell, they'd be like, Nadia, put your hair back. And stuff like that. And the other guy like was laying down, and they'd be like, can you open your eyes more? And they're just kind of focusing on like what the shot looks like. Mm-hmm. Or they like told me to cross my legs, 'cause I was in like essentially underwear. but not much. The makeup artist came up and said she had been like peeing her pants laughing. But I think I came at it a little bit too high energy for the show.
Is that like more challenging as an actor when they rarely give you feedback. They're just like, great energy, but like they don't really say like what to, or like when they say give me more options, they don't really tell you what options. They're just like hoping they pick what they want.
Yeah, it's more challenging, but it's also good because like you said, I think when you give too much specific notes, it gets in your head and it a little bit messes with the natural flow of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just something you have to like get used to and bring your work. Like that's why they hired you, you know, to like bring your work to the table. I really enjoyed it. And that's the thing with film too. That's nice is you can do a bunch of options. You can be like, I'll try it this way. And then the editors will choose what they like. So there was a couple lines that I did differently and then they chose what they wanted. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause with film, you want to do a couple options and then, yeah, that's what they told us as a director is like, never tell the actors what you want. Just try to like push them in that direction without, you know, telling them.
Yeah. I like that she gets, because the director's job is like to have the whole vision of the show. So like with the first scene, she gave all of us, there were four people in the scene. She gave all of us the notes of kind of like, okay, we're smiling, we're happy, we're excited. Because then in the second scene, it's like this cut and it's comedic because it's not what we expected. So I liked just her vision of how this is going to contrast with the second scene that I could understand. More than just like, this is how it is, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think that's like cause like with Columbia, with our film, again, they told us it was only that one scene. So they were like, as a director, imagine what was before and what's going to be after to try to get the tone. Yeah. But it's kind of hard when there's like literally nothing before and after.
Yeah, for sure.
But that's great about All American. Do you think it's going to be a reoccurring character or do you think it's just a one-off? Like
it's not a reoccurring character as of now, but you never know if they, I think people thought it was really funny. You can always, there's always potential to be called back, but it was just a one episode day player mm-hmm. role. Yeah.
Well, that's great. And you got more auditions lined up, right?
Yeah.
So like auditions.
Yeah. I get a good amount of auditions from my agent and I'm really lucky for that. They've all been self-tapes. Yeah.
Hopefully more comes out from.
Yeah.
Hopefully like it literally only takes like one role or like one.
For sure.
And then everything blows open.
For a few series leads. And obviously that would be a huge change just mm-hmm. in my life in general, if I booked any of that.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think I have like one, we can talk about one more aspect, which is your music. We're going to talk about mm-hmm. that. You have your album Wasted Art coming out on yeah. April 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I'm so excited. So I've been doing, long story short, I've been doing music since I was, or playing piano since I was like six. And then high school, I was kind of doing the singer-songwriter thing. And then all through college and a couple years after college, I didn't really put out any music. I didn't really perform live. I didn't do a bunch of music stuff. And then I'm really grateful to my boyfriend actually, because our birthdays are at the end of June. So last year I was like, what a good birthday gift it would be to like write a song for him. So I like wrote it. I recorded it at my old neighbor's house because he kind of had a studio and was like, as a producer and did that for me. And I gave it to him and he loved it. It made him cry. And then I was like, I'm going to get this, like, cause that was just an acoustic, like piano voice version, which was nice. I was like, I'm going to get this like fully produced. So I went on the site Sound Better, found my producer, Aubrey Whitfield, who's nice to also support a female producer, put it on Spotify. It's not my favorite song ever in the world that I've written, because it was just meant to be a birthday gift. But in doing that and in seeing a project through to the end, it really just ignited this inspiration. And I just started having song ideas just like pouring out of me. And so I was really grateful for that. So this album is a 6-song album. And I realized that kind of the theme of it is like dreams and aspirations. And I know a lot of people in the pandemic have been doing a bunch of introspection. And I realized that each song is kind of like a different voice in your head when it comes to your dreams. And I really wanted to make it different and have each song be a different genre. So like the first one's country, the second one's funk, the third one's pop, the fourth one's like hip hop, the fifth one's acoustic, and then the last one is like a jazzy slow jam. And I wrote them all completely alone. I went into Project Parallel in Hollywood, and my two producers, and this was back in early January that I originally recorded these, and my two producers, Alec and Austin, I kind of told them what I wanted, and they did a great job producing them. So they're finally ready. They're all submitted to stores, Spotify, Apple Music. They're going to be produced, or they're going to be released April 2nd, and I'm going to have a release launch gig 2 days before on March 31st. And it's going to be virtual, and we're just going to perform the songs, and it's also going to be a BLM fundraiser because it does cost like $6. Mm. And all the proceeds are going to go to 15 different BLM organizations. And then there's going to be a music video releasing 2 days after the release. And then I'll probably start doing in-person gigs actually starting in like May. So I'm really happy. It does feel really good to just be doing anything music wise. Cause I really wasn't for several years.
Mm. Was it, well, first off, let me get it straight. So the launch party will be March 31st.
That was a lot. Yes.
Album out April 2nd and then music video April 4th.
Yes, all 2 days apart. Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to get those dates out there as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, I saw that when you posted the photo to promote it. I looked at the back and it said like the names of all the songs and then the genres.
Yeah.
How was it going through like different genres? Was it like, were you like in the mindset of like, this is going to be this genre, or did it just naturally?
Yes. Okay. It was pretty intentional. Right. I just thought it'd be cool because I love so many genres of music, and I think a lot of people do, and genre is kind of slowly becoming a thing of the past. And I was just like, and a lot of times, and I know albums themselves are kind of a thing of the past, and this is like a really short album, it's six songs, but a lot of times I think you'll listen to an album and they all, in terms of sound and production, kind of sound the same. And I just thought it would be cool to do different genres. And then there's the unifying theme lyrically. So my first single, Crazy, is actually not on that album because it just doesn't fit lyrically. There's only one love song on it, and I just like a lot of genres in music, so it was really fun.
With the album, is it like an experience? I was talking with Damien and Evan, who were on my show, and we were talking about Kendrick's like To Pimp a Butterfly, how that album start to finish is like a story. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like the art of listening to an album from start to finish. So is that probably the best way to listen to this album, or is it like you can pick out songs and
both? I definitely put a lot of thought into the order of the songs. So it's actually a pretty short listen. I definitely want it to be able to be enjoyed from start to finish. But then because the songs are different genres, I'm hoping that they can get on different playlists just specific to their genres and enjoy that way too.
Keeps it interesting too. Like you said, instead of being the same song, like the same style back to back to back.
Yeah, it's a journey for sure.
I'm excited to listen to it. It'll be April 2nd when it comes out.
Yes, at midnight. So kind of Thursday night.
Thursday night.
Midnight, but yeah.
So it drops on midnight. So everyone be on the lookout.
Yeah.
So the whole pandemic, were you like messing around with music, you said? Like, or since June last year?
Yeah. Yeah. And I have like my keyboard right there, and it's kind of like my music little setup right there. But, and I think a lot of people and musicians like just naturally got to play more music in the pandemic. And I just got a lot more confidence, recently. So that's been really nice.
That's great. And you said the proceeds will go to BLM. I've been noticing, especially on your Instagram, we could talk about that too. You've been very active on like activists.
I'm pretty vocal.
Let me try to pull up, because I forgot there was like a lot you were posting recently.
I was just posting. The cool thing is my acting coach Amy Deshays, she actually invited me to a virtual race chat that I do with a couple other like white women every week on Fridays. So we actually have like a Zoom meeting like this, and each week a different person will suggest a different material. So like it'll be a podcast, or usually a podcast. And the podcast that we listened to this past week, it was called Is Your Money Racist? And I'd have to look up who it was by, because I shared it everywhere. I shared it on Instagram and Facebook because I just thought it was such an interesting listen, and it had a bunch of new information that I'd never really thought of before. And like, as far as if you have a retirement, if you have a Roth IRA and you're getting return and they're like investing for you and you're getting returns on things, a lot of times those returns are actually like profiting on the prison industry, for example. And just thinking about all the services, all the businesses that you do business with, such as like your accountant, your financial advisor, are they Black? Like, are they a woman? And that I'm probably not explaining it as well as the podcast, but that really makes I just got so excited about that, because that's like, sometimes it feels hopeless as far as like, what can we do? But that felt like a really tangible thing to do that actually feels like it'll have a really big impact as far as like allocating funds. Cause a lot of people don't know that like their money's going to the prison industry, ICE, guns. Like, I learned that Starbucks and Sprint and American Airlines are using prison labor, which is essentially like modern day slavery. And so it's just making people aware of that. Mm-hmm. And then using those funds and like putting them into Black households, like trying to have a Black accountant and things like that. It does a lot more like this coffee's from a Black coffee shop, Obit and Dells, but that's not that much money, you know? Mm. And it just got me excited because it felt like a really tangible thing that you can do.
Well, it's also a way to like, cause I didn't know anything about that. So it's like, yeah, you can educate people, and that's probably like the best thing as far as anybody can do, is like getting people aware.
Yeah. They just don't know. I didn't know.
Cause it's like, I was talking about not like these issues. I was talking with a few people about, as far as like, in the film industry, if you support a movie, like we brought up Harvey Weinstein, about like, if you go see one of his movies, like you're paying money for it, but we were saying we aren't supporting him. We're going to see like the filmmaker who made it, but it's like unfortunate that Weinstein's name is on it.
Yeah.
It's like one of those interesting topics, is like where that money really go, like, cause it's all spread out evenly through people.
Yeah.
So it's like, in a sense, you give money to Weinstein, but even if you it's like unintentionally giving money to him, because you're going to see it for something else.
Yeah, for sure.
Because like, I was bringing up like Tarantino's movies are all produced by him, but I'm not watching him because of Weinstein. I'm watching it because it's Tarantino and
right.
All this,
at least stuff. there's other people on the project that'll be getting, you know, the royalties and stuff. But yeah, money is really powerful, a really powerful tool that we have as consumers.
Well, that's because we brought it up with Bill Cosby too, like the Cosby Show, when they took that off. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure it was The Sun. I need to firmly look that up. But The Sun on the show was saying he lost a lot of money because they took Cosby Show off airs and he was losing all those royalty checks.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
So it's like, yeah, like it's unfortunate with that case because it's The Cosby Show.
Right.
But it's like, it does affect everybody else who worked on it or was a part of it.
Worked on it, yeah. And that sucks.
And it's like, it's so unfortunate, but it's like, it's also very interesting to dissect and look into.
Yeah. I'm glad that we're starting to kind of hold people accountable, because I think going forward, people will kind of see what's like acceptable and what's not. Whereas a lot of things probably used to be more tolerated. And I do like the idea of just not tolerating things like that, and not, I think a lot of people like to separate the artist from their maybe bad things that they've done, but I really don't think that men who have done bad things should be given any type of like platform or residuals or just anything.
Like, I'm fine, like, if they cut off the wine scenes from getting money from any projects, like, I'm cool with that. Cause
yeah,
like they don't need it. Cool. They don't deserve it.
Yeah, for sure.
I was going to ask, what's your thoughts on, the whole like cancel culture? If you have any opinions on that.
You know, I think that if someone is canceled, it's not up to them to decide if they disagree that they don't want to be canceled, that they should be listening to the people who are canceling them and trying to redeem themselves. I think that there's also this concept of like, sometimes even Trump you know, Trump tried to cancel Colin Kaepernick and make it so that he didn't want him to ever be able to play football again. Mm-hmm. Like he didn't call it canceling. And Colin Kaepernick's been practicing football since he was a kid. So I think canceling is all over the place. We just use different language for it. And I'm happy that people are starting to be held accountable for their actions. And it's hard to feel like, you know, shame or like you did something wrong, but we're all learning and we're all working to be better. So
I think he did the same thing, because when people were like boycotting Goya because he sponsored them, like people wouldn't go, like they wouldn't go buy Goya because he sponsored mm-hmm. it. And he came out and was like, he's like, you shouldn't like ban a product. And then like a week later was trying to like ban Goodyear or something.
Yeah. Or people try to boycott Nike because mm-hmm. Colin Kaepernick was
it's
spokesperson or something.
I have a pretty similar look on cancel culture. It's like, as far as the person, like if they've done something really bad, like they shouldn't have a platform. But like, yeah. If it's someone who can be redeemed and is like listening to feedback and is willing willing to do that, yeah. Like then give them a second chance. But if they're like getting feedback and then just fighting against it, it's like, okay, like,
yeah. And we're all learning, we're all gonna make mistakes, like especially I think as white people trying to mm-hmm. like help, it can be such a balancing act.
Oh, it's
and it's just being okay with like, I'm gonna make mistakes sometimes.
Mm-hmm. It's like a very fine line of a balancing act too.
Yeah, you wanna like lift up Black voices, but then and put them in positions of leadership, but then you don't want to put the responsibility of solving racism onto them, because it's not their problem. It's not their fault. It is their mm-hmm. problem now, but it's our responsibility. So like, it's always just like different balancing acts of like, what's helping? How am I doing my responsibility? Don't ask your Black friends, like, how do I fix racism? Like that's our job. We white people created it. And they're already, it's not Black people's job to like emotionally console us when we're feeling either guilty or depressed about racism.
The white guilt.
Like, yeah. Yeah. Like they, you know, experience it and they're not only obviously tired from it, but usually unable to even emote or like given permission to have emotions about it. And mm-hmm. then on top of that, they have to console us when we're feeling emotional about anything, you know?
Oh yeah.
So
it's definitely a fine line of like, it's honestly just everybody just be nice, like be yeah. good to others, like don't be an asshole.
For sure.
That's like yeah. my whole philosophy is like, just don't be an asshole.
Don't be an asshole. Yeah.
Respect. That's good. Like I'll respect you if you respect me. Like mm-hmm. if I don't vibe with you, I won't.
Yeah.
For but sure. It's like, just don't be hateful.
Yeah.
It's a lot of hate, but positivity, we can wrap the show up on a positive note. Yes. Go check out All American. I think I have your episode up right now. It's called
Roll the Dice. It's a flashback episode about what happened in Vegas, season 3, episode 7.
So go check out that. Be on the lookout for Nadia's album April 2nd, launch party March 31st, and then music video April 4th.
Yes.
I was gonna ask you to promote all your stuff, but I think I just did your job for you.
Yeah, you did it perfectly. Thank you so much.
But you can let everybody know where to find you if you want to, that way they can keep up with everything.
Yes
I'll let you do that.
I'm mostly on Instagram at Nadia Geiger, NADIAGEIGER. Same thing on Twitter, Facebook. I'm on Spotify, Apple Music. You can watch the CW on the stream it on the CW website. I'm on IMDb. Yeah, just everything Nadia Geiger.
Be sure to check that out. You can also check out the scene we did at Columbia over on Vimeo and YouTube.
Yeah.
It's called Ed and Evelyn. It should be over there. but that's there. I don't know where Ian. I think Ian's is on Vimeo too.
Yeah, that's probably where we are.
I was about to say, where are we?
I still have the crying scene as like the last scene in my reel. So
that scene, before we go, that scene, Ian was trying like getting me and Haley and Reed's opinion on it, because he was gonna do from Joseph's
the bird's
side.
Eye.
He was gonna do that, but he got like you and Joseph, and then he was gonna do a reverse shot to get like the other angle. And we were like, don't do that, because they're both like, you both were in frame, so like, we're like, there's no point in doing that, you're just gonna waste time.
Yeah, and I had like a single tear rolling down my cheek, I remember.
And that's the one that made it in the final cut, I believe.
Yeah,
like I think we only did one or two takes for that, for that, for that setup. But thank you for joining the show, Nadia.
This is, thank you so much for having me, this is so much fun. This is my first podcast,
and first podcast is we'll probably get you back on the show. Like season three of the show I've mentioned is booking up.
Sweet. Yeah,
but we'll get you on the show again at some point.
I'd love to
have to look at the schedule. But we'll be back next week on April 2nd. I'm gonna announce the April guest lineup I think tomorrow, so be on the lookout for that. You can listen to us anywhere you listen to podcasts: Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Stitcher. Follow us on Instagram, leave us a review, go rate us, subscribe to the show, share it with everybody you know. And then until next time, I'm your host, Tim Martin. This has been Lighting Up the Marquee.
Guess I'll go when I go. Till then, I'm fine. I'm looking out my window like I can't control my own life. Playing piano in the dark, I feel all alone out here. You ever had a writer's block that lasted a few years? It never is the right time. I feel like a flat line. I tell myself I don't have the heart. It's not that I can't achieve everything that I see. It's that I'm just too scared to start. I'm wasted art. I'm wasted art. I feel like a waste of food, just eating till I die. The weather changes like my mood. It gets dark at 5. Taking my shirt off in the dark, I feel less alone around you. You're 6 years older and I'm still scared of turning 22. It never is the right time. I feel like a flat line. I tell myself I don't have the heart. It's not that I can't achieve everything that I see. It's that I'm just too scared to start. I'm wasted art. I'm wasted art. I feel like a flat line. I tell myself. myself I don't have the heart. It's not that I can't achieve everything that I see. It's that I'm just too scared to start. I'm wasted art. I'm wasted art. I'm wasted art.